episode of the GPP, Gifted Performance Podcast. I am your host, as always, the Squad Father, bringing you the knowledge and practical takeaways to improve your own general physical preparedness. Season 2, Episode 10. And I have to say that this episode, I'm very excited about. I do think that this will be a top 10 episode for the season so far. Today's episode sponsor, getting right into the sponsor, is not Logitech. Because as you've probably noticed, my camera is much clearer. I'm a little bit more zoomed in than usual. So, fun story, Jake and I were like, yo, we gotta find a video camera or a webcam. I can zoom out a little bit. I was too up in people's faces, I thought. So we got a Logitech. Thing's pretty expensive, says it shoots in 4K. 4K, my butt. That was not 4K. It was blurry. The thumbnail looked terrible. It was zoomed out, but there was nothing else good. So today's sponsor is absolutely not Logitech, and we encourage you to not buy Logitech at all. Completely boycott. If you're going to do anything that has to do with Logitech, buy shorts. Short Logitech stock, because their products are going to crap. Going to crap. I'm looking at it right now. I can see it. It's right up there. It's still staring at me, and it wants me to know that it wants me to turn it back on, but I'm not going to. I'm not going back to it. It's all FaceTime HD camera from here. I'm right up in your grill. The sponsor for today's video is actually Gifted Academics. So Gifted Academics is your one-stop shop for all things certification prep. The certification industry, the certification space as a whole, is crowded with everything that you could ever be certified in. Don't believe me? Go to NASM's website. Go to ISSN's website. No, not ISSN. Sorry. ISSN, we love you. Go to ISSA's website and just look at all the certifications that they offer. You can be a social media influencer certified for $300. What we at Gifted Academics have done is sort through all the riffraff of certifications and bring you the ones that you truly need to enhance your career if you're already a coach or personal trainer, or take your career to that next level if you're looking to diversify your offerings and increase the revenue that you make year over year while also providing your clients with a better service, which is what it's all about. You can visit the Gifted Academics website, that's gifted-academics.com, to see what certifications we recommend and what accelerated self-led preps we have for you so far. Take a look, get certified. When you pass, because we have 100% pass certification, our 100% pass rate currently, please let us know you passed so that we can sing your praises and send us a testimonial. We will love you for it. Make sure you do all of the podcast things before we get into the episode. That includes liking the post, sending it to a friend, sending it to your mom, sending it to your dog. Make sure that you have all of them watching it on multiple screens. Pull it up on your phone, pull it up on your computer, pull it up on your iPad, let it run, feed the algorithm those three views. We love that. Like, subscribe, follow us on Instagram, Gifted HQ. And of course, follow our Gifted Academics page as well. That is Gifted_Academics. If you want more information about what Gifted HQ does as a whole, our coaching department, our training templates, our self-led or our, you know, automated training programs, you can go to gifted-hq.com to learn more. Pricing runs from $30 a month for our Gifted Express, all the way up to $150 to $300 a month for our competitive coaching services. Go check it out. If you need more information, feel free to use the contact form and our admin will reach out to help you find the best service for you. That's our intro for today. Let's jump right in with our first section, which is, Jake, hit it, memes and things. All right, our first video of two that we've got here is going to be something that I saw Mark Bell share. So, full disclaimer here, I think this content isn't horrible. I don't think that this is the worst thing ever. I just think that there was a couple very clear omissions in this video. So the video is, it's not Mark's content originally. It's Mark sharing, who is this? Noah Perlofit. I don't really know, I have no idea who Noah Perlofit is, but it's like a collaborative post between the two of them. And I think the overall mess, Jake, just let it play.
This croissant, you can have all these raspberries with this much whipped cream.
For these 5 frosted Oreos, you could have these 2 bowls of sugar-free Jell-O. For these nerd balls, you could have this many peaches. And for these 6 baby Snickers bars, you could have this many apples with cinnamon and brown sugar substitute. All of this here has 2,100 calories. You, my friend, could finish it in one sitting and still be hungry. All of this, 2,100 calories. Good luck finishing all of it. Good luck finishing even half of this bowl of Jell-O, man. Follow me for more tips and go check out the grocery shopping list in my bio.
So the overall, you know, the overall view, the overall idea of this video is essentially that you can substitute very energy-dense foods for volume and nutrient-dense alternatives. I don't think this is news to anyone. I think this is a very funny video because, you know, and as you just saw, instead of this croissant, you can have all of these raspberries and whipped cream. If you eat all of those raspberries, you will poop in your pants. If you eat the croissant, you will have 300 calories worth of happiness. Up next, we have 5 frosted Oreos. Tasty. Love those. You could have these 2 bowls of sugar-free Jell-O. And if you eat those 2 bowls of sugar-free Jell-O, the artificial sweeteners, more specifically, the sugar alcohols, you guessed it, will make you poop in your pants. Instead of having these nerd clusters, you know, very tasty candy, the chewy little nerd cluster gummy kind of things, fantastic. Love those. Definitely recommend them. You could have an entire bowl of peaches. And when you eat all of those peaches in one sitting, you bet you will poop in your pants. And instead of these 6 mini Snickers, you could have what looks like 12 apples. And after you eat those 12 apples, you already know what I'm going to say. You're going to poop in your pants. Oh, and cinnamon and brown sugar. All of these here have 2,100 calories total, and you could have that in one sitting easily and still be hungry. Or you can eat a bowl of raspberries with some whipped cream, 4 peaches, 6 apples, and 2 massive bowls of sugar-free Jell-O, after which you will absolutely blow the stitches off your britches because your stomach will be in such pain. So the overall idea of this post is good, right? It's a post that basically says very energy or calorie-dense foods, usually applied in a setting of a fat loss diet, are not your best option, right? They don't really take up very much room in your stomach. They usually taste tremendously good. They come with a high calorie value with little to no actual satiation. If anything, you eat those 6 mini Snickers, you're probably hungry for more. So the point of the post is that if you make the swap of those 6 Snickers for what looks like 4 or 5 apples, because the calorie equivalent is the same, you'll be significantly more full. I think people, especially the dude here, Noah, in this post, just takes this way, way, way too far in the direction of bullying. And what happens with that is people absolutely overload their GI, they overload their digestive system with volume and tons of fiber, and they run from the side of, sure, I ate it, it was tasty, it didn't really fill me up, to, I ate this food, I'm so full, I feel sick to my stomach, the plumbing in my house is now ruined. And there's another end of the spectrum. Again, pendulum, guys. We always talk about the pendulum swinging in the fitness industry. The pendulum over here, junk food, low density in terms of how much, low volume, I should say, high density of calories. Very little amount of food, very high amount of calories. Pendulum over here, choosing extremely low calorie, high volume foods and eating those in mass so that you feel full. His examples are, like, except for the sugar-free Jell-O, his examples are actually pretty modest, pretty moderate, pretty conservative, right? He's going for things like apples, peaches, raspberries, and whipped cream. And all of those actually come with a decent calorie count. The real, real extreme end of this high volume spectrum is people that are like putting like cinnamon and Splenda on cucumbers or on zucchini, you know, basically zero calories and just eating a ton of it. Short term, okay, so the pendulum example, the truth is in the middle. We can mix the two. Some high volume foods, some foods that you enjoy, get a nice balance there. That way you're not craving those foods that you're missing out on, but you're also getting the, you know, vitamin and mineral dense, lower calorie, higher volume, high fiber foods that your body needs to function optimally. Boom. I like that. The middle is great. But there's another point here that I think that a lot of people who have done maybe a bodybuilding prep or an extreme fat loss diet will add to this. And that is that these high volume foods really are only a temporary fix to the problem of feeling tremendously hungry. When we look at what is actually driving hunger during a fat loss diet, what we see is that hunger is being driven by two primary factors. That is low body fat and low energy availability or low calories in the diet. By eating a ton of sugar-free Jell-O, we create this stomach stretch reflex that sometimes makes us feel full, sometimes just makes us feel tremendously bloated and uncomfortable, which is not something that we're shooting for, but it doesn't really ever fix the hunger problem because hunger is being driven by low calories, low body fat. Until your body fat comes up to a healthy range, if you are coming out of an extreme diet that is an unhealthy amount of body fat, temporary, as you bring your body fat to a healthy range, that hunger will drop off. As you bring your calories back up to a normal maintenance level range for you, that hunger will drop off. Eating a dozen peaches or eating a half dozen apples or eating two bowls of sugar-free Jell-O isn't addressing the real root problem of why the individual is feeling hungry. So you have to strike that balance. Can you trick your body with insane amounts of volume of food in the short term? Yes. Is this a tool that you can use if you're trying to push your body fat to extremely low levels for something like a bodybuilding show? Yes, you can. But for general population individuals, these high volume food hacks and swaps really shouldn't be a strategy that you ever have to use because your hunger at no point in a fat loss phase should be at a point where you feel that it's out of control and you have to use strategies like this. If it is, chances are you are over dieting, you're doing too much exercise. There's something in the equation that's not allowing your body to reach that hunger, fueling, performance-based nutrition homeostasis that we're all looking for. If that describes you, if you're currently on a fat loss phase, you're like, man, I'm just insanely hungry all the time. Even these volume foods really aren't doing much for me. Either talk to your coach or reach out to a gifted coach and we would love to help. So, Noah, Mark, decent post. I think it's funny because it doesn't address the fact that these things are going to blow your GI system out, but it's still a good tactic, a good strategy that can be used in a pinch. Up next on our list of memes and things, we've got, and before I hit record on this, I tried to find this post. I think it might've been deleted. It's from Health Illy. It's actually a good Instagram name. Healthily, names like Illariana or something like that. It's a good Instagram name. I like it. I approve of the tag. I don't approve of the post because it's dumb. 13 minutes, which means I can start cursing, but I'm not going to yet because I have restraint. So, Jake, you can go ahead and pull up the screenshot, or if you found the post, pull up the post and play that instead. The post as a whole is addressing the fact that this individual thinks that the new wave of protein powders that are flavored like things like Apple Jacks and Cinnamon Toast Crunch and Fruit Loops and commercially recognizable foods that people like, that people see as tasty, steering consumer behavior. So I'm looking at the shelf of protein powders and I say, I see one that's chocolate. I've had chocolate protein powder a million times over. I see the one that says Fruit Loops. I love Fruit Loops. I think Fruit Loops are one of the best cereals that has ever been made. I'm going to choose the one that says Fruit Loops because I've done the chocolate before. It's played out. I don't want it anymore. I want the Fruit Loops one. And the scope of this post for her, or her message that she wanted to get out there with this post, was that these alternatively newer flavored protein powders, your Fruit Loops, your Apple Jacks, your Cinnamon Toast Crunch, your Fruity Pebbles, all of those are actually worse for your health than your traditional protein powders. So what I've done, and Jake, I want you to throw them up on the screen right here and right here. Same brand, Six Star Nutrition, chocolate-flavored protein powder, Fruit Loop-flavored protein powder. The ingredient list. In her post, she said that the Fruit Loop-flavored or the newer flavored protein powders are full of chemicals, additives, and fillers. Look at the ingredient list. It is the exact same. It is quite literally the exact same with very, very minor differences. You still see roughly the exact same preservatives, fillers, all of that stuff. No real difference. No real difference. Then to our next point here is that I think this style of content as a whole is really aimed at the echo chamber. So when you look at this post, the screenshot that I've provided here, or if Jake found the post, good job, Jake. Thousands of likes, hundreds of shares, hundreds of comments. This style of content from the outside looking in looks like it drives a lot of engagement. But the engagement that you're getting on a post like this is 100% echo chamber driven. It's people who already hold this belief that are liking, commenting, and sharing because they already think it's true. These are people who are intermediate or advanced in their fitness journey, which is a small percent of the fitness industry as a whole. The majority of the fitness industry, I would estimate 60 to 80% of those who are viewing fitness, health, nutrition-based content are stark beginners, meaning that they have just started on their fitness journey, or they are in that contemplation planning phase of their nutrition and training journey, which means they haven't quite started yet, but they're gathering the information and starting to plan for when they start. That is the vast majority of the individuals who are in the fitness space at any given time. You're beginners. So content like this that's geared towards shares from intermediate and expert individuals, folks who don't need help in getting enough protein in their diet daily, are the ones that are driving the engagement here. If I'm a fitness and health content creator, I am in the business of what drives the most engagement. It's posts like that. But if I am staying true to myself as a health and fitness coach with the aim of helping as many people as possible get into better shape or the best shape of their life, posting content like that just goes way over people's heads, or even worse, it puts the wrong message in their head. I'm a beginner. Let's say I'm a complete beginner. I know nothing about nutrition. I know nothing about training. I read online somewhere that getting more protein in my diet is a really good thing for my health overall. It helps me build muscle, helps me, my immune system, bones, helps me adapt to training, recover, get back to it, not be as sore. Fantastic. The RDA for protein is 50 grams, which sucks. That is way too low. I'm like, okay, I get 50 to 60 grams of protein a day, but I don't really like chicken and beef and turkey and fish and eating a ton of that stuff throughout the day. I'm going to supplement with a protein shake. So I go to the store, I grab my Fruit Loops protein powder because I love protein, and I start mixing that up, and I get my protein from, say, 60 grams a day up to 120 grams per day. That alone, combined with a basic resistance training program, will 100% improve someone's health. Going from 60 grams of protein to 120 grams of protein a day in combination with a relatively healthy diet and resistance training program will help someone's health. So I do that for a couple weeks. And then I'm scrolling Instagram late at night. I got nothing better to do. And I come across Health Elite's post. And it says, you are killing yourself. Additives, fillers, all of that. So I say, oh, whoa, like, I don't want that. I'm going to remove those protein shakes from my diet. So I take the protein shakes out. And I go from 120 grams of protein back down to 60 grams of protein a day. This, even in the scope of a healthy nutrition program and a solid resistance training program, is a net negative to this person's health. Cutting their protein intake in half is a net negative to their health, period, point blank, end of story. So content like this, while it seems helpful at surface level, when it reaches the level of the end consumer, which 60 to 80% of the end consumer who are consuming this style of health, fitness, and nutrition content, it actually serves as a negative. So the point that this girl is making is that fillers and additives and preservatives and all of that can be bad for your health. Maybe. I want to say probably, but I can't even level it up to a probably. I'm just going to stick with maybe. Maybe. At high levels, sure. But for a scoop or two scoops a day, maybe even 5 days a week, if it's helping someone get to a higher level of protein intake, it is a net positive for their health. Stop scaring them with the minutiae of your gut health crusade just to put them in a worse position. We have to move the big rocks first. And one of the biggest rocks for people who are just getting into the fitness and nutrition space is eating enough protein. The RDA, again, is 50 grams a day. That's terrible. We need to get people close as we possibly can to 0.7 to 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight. And if Fruit Loops flavored protein powder once a day, 5 to 6 days a week is how we get them to that point, then we shut the hell up. 21 minutes, I lost it. It's okay though, Jake. I did pretty good. We shut the hell up about fillers, additives, and preservatives. Like, let's focus on getting these people in a place where they're getting enough protein. And if you want to go down the gut health filler preservative, all of that negative gut microbiome, all of that stuff at a later date, once they've had a couple months of actually consuming enough protein powder or protein, grams of protein in their day, that's fine. I'm okay. At that point, I don't really care. But for 60, 80% of the people who are consuming fitness and health content, they're brand new. They're beginners. Let's teach them how to move the big, big rocks. Let's teach them how to train productively. Let's teach them what exercises to use, how to not be scared of certain exercises, how to move correctly in the gym, how to get enough protein, how to eat enough fiber. And then let's dig into the stuff that accounts for 1% to 3% of their total results at a later date. So again, much like Mark Bell's post, this is one that really has a good intent to it. It's just that in this war of creating content that drives the most views, likes, and engagements, we're forgetting who the content should actually be steered at if we want to have the biggest impact possible. If we just want to get likes, shares, and whatever, like, who cares? Share your silly Fruit Loops protein powder crusade. Care. If that's your only, the only thing that you're in this for is likes and views and all that stuff, then fine, go for it. Share all that garbage. But if you are living, if you're telling people and you're trying to live your life in a way that says, I'm all for the community, I'm all for helping others, you can't share a message like this. It doesn't actually do that. It does more harm than it does good because the amount of people that view it and get harmed by it greatly outweighs the people who consume it and benefit from it. All right, Jake, let's get into our short form turn long form content section, which comes from our own coaches who made some posts this week. The first post is from Dr. Mike Taylor, who actually competed last weekend, all-time PR total, under the guidance of Tombot.exe, our favorite artificial intelligence in a human skin bag, Mr. Thomas Butler himself. So Mike's content was all about rehab for powerlifters and the idea that rehab for powerlifters should not be reductionist in nature. It shouldn't look like a hip replacement rehab for a 75-year-old individual. The goal of rehab for a powerlifter, for a weightlifter, for a bodybuilder, for a CrossFitter, for a performance-based, for any athlete in our space, that's performance-based barbell mixed modal athletics, should look like the sport that you are going back into. It should prepare you for all-time PRs. You are a powerlifter and you squat 700 pounds and you hurt your hip somehow, some way, your rehab should look like a program that gets you back to squatting 700 pounds and beyond. which for a lot of individuals isn't your reductionist low load banded exercises once you've reached that transition back into recovery, back into training phase. Recovery stuff, fine, sure, cool, that's awesome. But the majority of what we do should, in a rehab setting, should be geared towards getting back to peak performance. And that's the gist of Mike's post here. You know, you can put the caption right here. It's really well written by Mike. I probably can't do a better job of explaining it than he did. So I'm just going to plagiarize him. Mike says, is your rehab plan just busy or is it productive? There's no prize given for working really hard, but not getting back to pursuing all-time best performance again. And yet I see it all the time. Lifters sink tons of resources into injury rehab that is either woefully ineffective or entirely unnecessary and are left spinning their wheels. It's not about your warm-up. It's not about tib raises. It's not about special shoes. It's about following a plan designed to help you take you from A to B and hopefully never look back and never get injured again. If that's something that you're looking for, you absolutely want to talk to Mike Taylor. Mike Taylor is, maybe I'm biased here, Mike Taylor is the best performance-based barbell sport, walk it like you talk it, lives the life PT in the industry today. The guy has worked through a ton of injuries before, continues to help others do the same, and all of his athletes are fucking dogs. Absolute dogs that, sure, they have small injuries pop up and then they're right back at it. So Mike, obviously we love the work here, obviously we love what you're putting down, and as the announcer said at your last meet, wow, what a mustache. I like that they called you Michael too. It's an interesting one. I don't know if I've ever heard anyone call you Michael. All right, our second short form turned long form content for the week comes from Mr. Plaza, one of our bodybuilding coaches at Gifted. Anthony made a pretty solid post here about individuals who want to get bigger, right? Bodybuilder, compete, place well, don't place well, whatever it is. Their first Instagram post is like, always back to the grindstone, got to get bigger. Judges want me to be bigger, tighter, fuller next time around. And then they train and they eat like ninny nincompoop baby goo goo gaga when they get back to the gym. The caption rarely matches up with the effort. So Anthony has actually laid out a pretty good roadmap for people who genuinely want to get bigger in the off season. People who work with Anthony improve. They get bigger in their off season. Listen to this guy. He knows what he's doing. It shows in the people that he works with. And here are the four biggest reasons why you aren't getting any bigger in the off season. Number one is such a huge one, and I think that this is largely driven by the body dysmorphia that grips most bodybuilders. Number one, you're obsessed with scale, keeping your weight low or staying lean post-show. Not picking on women here, because there are plenty of men that do this as well, but a lot of women say, okay, I'm going to my off-season, I don't want to get above X weight. Now, I competed at 128, I don't want to get above 135. How are you going to grow any muscle if you're capping yourself at 7 pounds? A gun show. Annie sent me a post last week. A bodybuilder, oh, into my off season, not messing around, sitting at 210 right now, not going to let my weight go over 212. What? You're not going to let yourself gain any more than 2 pounds in your off season? Here is the easiest way that I can put this to you guys. If you go into your off season and the scale doesn't go up, and at the end of the offseason, you're like, not much scale weight gained. Feel like I stayed leaner through the offseason. No, I made improvements. You didn't. You didn't make any improvements. Zero. Zero. None. Not a single ounce of muscle was gained. How on God's green earth can you expect to gain muscle if you refuse to let the scale go up? If the scale's not going up, if you're not getting heavier, where's the muscle going? I gained some muscle, but it doesn't weigh anything. It's not going to show up on the scale. It's, you know, this new form of muscle. Don't be an idiot. Don't be an absolute buffoon. If the scale's not going up, you're not getting any bigger. And if the scale going up messes with your head, then stop stepping on the scale. and eat your food, clean your plate. Bodybuilding is a sport where you need to build your body, and bodies and muscles are built in a caloric surplus for extended periods of time. I don't care if you're taking every single drug under the sun at maximum dosages. If you're not gaining any weight during the off season, congrats. You spent your entire off season staying the same size, or if you gained fat, which is likely, you just trained like an idiot. You actually got smaller. Next time you get on stage, congrats. You're smaller, you're softer, you're going to place worse. That's not why we do this. So embrace the fact that the scale is going to go up. Do you have to become the fattest human being on earth? We're talking Lee Priest peak off season. Jake, post the photo. Lee Priest off season. Just Google it. Post it right here. Do you have to look like this? No, you don't. Ronnie Coleman, peak off season, guest posing. Jake, post the photo right here. Do you have to be as fat as that? No, you don't. You don't. But if the scale's not going up and you're telling yourself that you're getting bigger, you are lying. You are lying to yourself. All right, Anthony's second point here is you aren't prioritizing rest and recovery. You're doing a bunch of extra stuff. You're doing more cardio because you want to stay leaner. Your coach didn't tell you to do that. You're training every single day. You're not taking off days. You're doing way too many sets, volume, too much intensity, and your sleep is garbage. Yeah, that's a conducive environment to getting jacked in the off season. I think not. I agree with Anthony here. People go into the off season and they're like, all right, time to take it up a notch. I'm taking my sets not just to failure, but to ultra failure. I'm not going to stop at 10 sets per body part per week. I'm going to do 40. And they get into this mentality where more is what's going to drive their results instead of longer. Anyone who has been a bodybuilder for any extended amount of time and has actually had success in the sport, which I understand is very few people, will tell you that bodybuilding is a sport of longevity. It's a war of attrition. People who have been doing it the longest are the best at it. Muscle building is something that takes time, and even in the presence of drugs, still has an end cap of how fast you could actually get bigger. If you are like, hey, I'm going to compete every year and only do an 8-month off season, but I'm going to hammer it in the off season. Congrats. You're never going to get any better. This stuff takes time. And often if we don't prioritize rest and recovery, all we do is increase our risk for injury, overuse injury being the most common here. And then we miss training and boom, all of a sudden we're out of the gym. How big do you get when you're out of the gym? Not very big. So, long off seasons, extended periods of time, understand that if you want to be the best bodybuilder in the world or the best bodybuilder that you can be personally, it's probably a decade-long commitment to doing so. So when you think about what am I doing today, think about is this something that I can sustain and continue to make progress for the next 10 years? If you look at your current plan, you're like, this is something that I can maintain for 6 months, and then I'm so burnt out, I'm just going to need a break. It's the wrong plan. You're going too hard. You're not prioritizing rest. You're not prioritizing recovery. Number three goes back to number one. These two are intertwined. Not eating enough. You gotta eat enough to see the scale go up. You gotta eat enough to fuel your training. If you're not getting stronger, if you are not seeing improvements in performance and the scale isn't going up, there's no magic happening. The calories aren't, you know, running through the post at, you know, whatever the hell it was called, 9 3/4 in Harry Potter. They're not just like zipping off to some other place. It's not enough. It's not enough. Your body is burning through it. You're not making progress. You need to be eating enough. Your activity needs to maybe even be lowered to see that scale go up at the rate that you and your coach want it to go. And if it's not, adjustments need to be made. You need to move around less, or you need to eat more. It's a simple inputs and outputs equation. If the inputs, your calories, are lower than your outputs, your calories out, your activity levels, and your weight is staying the same or it's going down, and you are in a muscle building off-season phase, you are failing. All right, you are failing. You are not getting the job done. You need to move around less or you need to eat more. Last but not least, small part of the equation, but one thing you don't want to forget is your hormones. Make sure that you're getting blood work done. Make sure that sex hormones are where they need to be. Make sure that if you are an enhanced athlete, that the hormones that you are using are doing what they're intended to do. Anthony talks a little bit about HRT here, optimal hormone levels, time off, time on, thyroid hormones. These are all things that you want to look at to make sure that progress is optimized over long periods of time. Again, can you tank your hormones or do insane stuff to your hormones short term and get great results? Absolutely. But guess what? You done burned yourself out. And now you had a successful year or 2 years of bodybuilding. Congrats. That's your career. Unless you want to take 2 or 3 years off to fix that stuff, that's your career. I hope you enjoyed it. The amount of, again, not picking on women here, just see this more in women than I see it in men, NPC bikini girls who compete 12 freaking times a year, and then 2 years goes by and they look up and they're like, I don't really like this bodybuilding stuff anymore, and I don't know why. It's like, come to me. I can tell you why you hate it, because you put yourself through the most stressful physical, mental, spiritual, hormonal test that the body can handle, extended periods under starvation conditions, and you did that every month for 2 years straight. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I have enough IQ points and enough brain cells to rub together to tell you why you might not like bodybuilding as much anymore. One more point on Anthony's post here. Number 5, I don't know who Jana B. Bananas is, but this is a top tier comment from her. She says, reason number 5 is I'm not working out. Undisputable. That is a very good point. You're not gaining any muscle or getting any bigger because you're not working out. It's a good point, Jana. Glad you added that in there. A little comedic relief after what was a solid, serious, informative post from Anthony. Now, don't forget, guys, links are going to be in the description down below. Our Miami meetup at Old Bull is February 24th. That is around 2 weeks from when this podcast will go live. Our early bird discount sales, we already ran through those. Those sold out in a hurry, but you can still sign up today. $50 gets you a spot at the meetup. That includes a training session with the team, drinks and snacks at that training session, a Q&A after, seminar with yours truly teaching you an undisclosed skill, but one that you're going to want to refine in your training career. And it also brings you along for the after party where you get one appetizer and one drink on us, the Gifted HQ team. If you want to sign up today, or if you have questions, you can feel free to go to the link below. Use the contact form if you have questions. Sign up today. Don't miss your spot. We're only going to take a couple more spots. And when those are gone, they're gone. We'll see you at the next one if you missed the first one. But you don't want to miss this first one. All right, now getting into our clients of the week, our gifted all-stars of the week. Usually we just highlight one, but I was digging around. I realized that I hadn't posted any transformations of my people in quite some time. So I want to rapid fire through those transformations. We have Aaron Heligman, very busy doctor, insane schedule, works crazy hours, 3 kids. Yeah, Oriana and Aaron have 3 kids. So dad of 3 kids, really solid 20-pound transformation. 15 to 20 pounds of ballast. I don't have his data in front of me. Showed that transformation, and Aaron has told me that he's just getting started. He really wants to dial it up. Man wants six-pack abs, and he wants a huge, chunky dumper. That we can do, Aaron. Up next is Billy. So Billy has gone through one of the most successful fat loss phases that I have seen in quite some time. Obviously, the most successful fat loss phase that he's ever done in his entire life, and his reverse diet has been amazing on the way back up. I think we got as low as 2,300 or 2,400 calories, which isn't too bad for someone who weighs around 170-ish on the way down. You can see how lean he got here in that transformation. We've worked our way back up to 3,400 calories, so 1,100 calories have been added to his diet, almost a 50% increase in his total calories, with his weight only going up around 4 or 5 pounds over a couple months. And training has absolutely gone insane. So Billy told me, you know, I want to come out of this fat loss phase and stay as lean as possible. I said, sweet, we can still eat a lot on the way up. We just kind of need to gauge where that new maintenance point was. He's always on point with his numbers, and here is the result from that. Our next two are a couple newlyweds, Ian and Jess Foley. You can throw up their transformations here. Jess and I have been working together for, I think, 2 years now, a couple years now. So start all the way to where we are now, or I think it's a relatively recent photo, maybe like a month or so old, just pulled from her check-in photos folder. I mean, Jess came to me with this pretty standard goals when a woman comes to me and they say, you know, want to lose some body fat, I want to tone up, I want to get a little stronger, I want to build some muscle, all of that. And this transformation is the perfect testament to that. So Jess is another one whose macros never really needed to be adjusted too much on the way down. We kind of found her sweet spot and she was able to lose, I think it was like 20 or 25 pounds of body fat, which is just ridiculous with no rebound at all whatsoever. That weight came off, and again, a testament to her hard work and her consistency, has pretty much completely stayed off. That's through Thanksgiving, through Christmas, through a wedding, through honeymoon, all of that. And now she's right back to work, recharged, ready to hit another fat loss phase. Check back on Jess in a couple months and the transformation is going to be crazy again. It's going to be another like version of this start to finish. Ian and I have been working together for not as long, around 6 months, but when Ian came to me, he's like, you know, I don't want to mess around. I don't want to waste any time. I want to get as lean as I've ever been. And I want to get there fast. Ian is another one who works long hours. His sleep schedule is kind of insane. His training schedule is kind of all over the place. But Ian, when he gets to the gym, which is very frequently, I think Ian's training 6 days a week now, absolutely smashes in the gym. Is always asking for more. Is always asking to go harder. If anything, I have to tell Ian to dial it back a lot of the time. But Ian is... you know, cut from the same cloth as Jazz, hard worker, very consistent, and you can see what that looks like in terms of his transformation. Two more to finish us off. Megan McPhee. Megan and I have a fantastic relationship. Megan is one of the clients that has become, you know, one of the closer friends for me, and a lot of that has come from our conversations that we've had around kind of what flexibility looks like in terms of a nutrition plan. So Megan is a self-admitted, she doesn't hide it from anyone, Taco Bell enthusiast. She loves, loves, loves Taco Bell. And the biggest kind of like light switch for her was that she could still have that Taco Bell once or twice a week and make a transformation like this. This, not hating on everyone else. Everyone else here has had a fantastic transformation. I think this transformation is above and beyond. This is insane, right? Completely different person. And to exhibit the flexibility that she did, she's another one who works crazy hours. Her job is always, listen, Megan, if your boss is watching this, what are you doing, man? Leave Megan alone. She works hard enough already. Stop dumping more work on her. She needs to go to the gym. She needs to work on herself. She needs to have time for herself to give back to you. So Megan, the boss, I'm watching you. You want to sign up? No discount, but I will let you sign up. You can't even use Megan's discount code, but I'm going to still give her the referral money. Megan's transformation, considering the flexibility, the hours that she works, everything that she has on her plate, all of that she takes on herself and how busy she is, this transformation is something that truly speaks to me as something that, you know, Gifted and Team Squat Father as a whole are both all about. So Megan, fantastic. Love it. You're doing amazing. If you could replicate 50% of this success moving forward, you're going to have all of your transformation wildest dreams will come true. So another one, kudos to you. Last but not least is someone who's relatively new to the Team Squat Father Nutrition space. She's doing the transformation challenge, is Beth. So Beth and I have been working together. I do her CrossFit programming, and she was doing her own nutrition for a while. When she started the challenge, she switched over to having me do her nutrition. I believe she's down 4 or 5 pounds of body fat in the first 3 weeks of the challenge. Transformation here, pretty crazy. At the end of this transformation, I would be really shocked if Beth didn't have like a very visible six-pack delt separation. She's basically going to look like Tia Toomey, the Tia Toomey of Texas. Texas's Tia Toomey. That's you, Beth. On top of this, she's gotten stronger. Her weightlifting looks better. Her gymnastics are improving tenfold week over week. Again, another reason why you want to sign up with a coach who keeps all of your, you know, all of your goals in mind, performance and nutrition based. Someone like Beth. Improve your performance tremendously, get stronger, get fitter, build muscle, also lose body fat at the same time. It's possible, 100% possible, but you need to be with the right coach. And if you need that right coach, you go to giftedhq.com. One other plug. Jake, you didn't even have an ad roll in there. I just plugged it in. Yeah, how's that for ad read? Ad lib, ad read. All right, finishing things off with our Reddit questions for the day. Our first question, Jake, is 4730. It's a question about high protein meal before versus after a workout. So this individual wants to know if there's a benefit, if there's a detriment to having a high protein meal before a workout versus after a workout. Is that high protein meal before a workout going to provide additional energy for the workout? Or is it better to have a small meal and then save the majority of your protein or your larger meals for after your workout? So the first point that I want to make, and I just want to like X this out immediately, is that a high protein meal before a workout is not going to fuel that workout. If we look at our primary fuel source for resistance training, really resistance training, cardiorespiratory training, almost any training, body's preferred fuel source is going to be carbohydrates. So that's carbohydrates from the diet, or from a pre-workout meal, or stored carbohydrates in the form of muscle glycogen. So stored glycogen are going to do the job for you in 90 to 99% of cases for people who are just casual resistance training, or, you know, maybe you're a powerlifter who does, you know, 45-minute strength sessions. Maybe you're a CrossFitter who just goes in and does the daily walk for 30 to 45 minutes. Stored glycogen are going to carry you through that. You don't need any additional. If you were to, let's say you're a marathon runner. If you're a marathon runner, you may tap all the way through that stored glycogen. Up next is going to be fat. So stored fat from the body is what you're going to use as your next fuel source. Protein is used when you really fucked up everything else. So if you're on a very low calorie diet, maybe you're a bodybuilder at the end of prep and energy intake is incredibly, incredibly low, then you might start to see protein from skeletal muscle being broken down and certain amino acids being turned into glucose to use as fuel. This is not what we want. We don't want to get into this situation. The ideal situation is that glycogen does the job for us. The oh crap button is stored fat, triglyceride from stored fat. The you really screwed up, you starved yourself button is using protein for fuel. So in the grander scheme of this question, largely this is a non-issue. Eating a good serving of protein before your training, neither good nor bad. Eating a large serving of protein directly after training, you can make the argument because of, you know, the increased responsiveness of your muscle to glucose and amino acid post-training, that a large serving of protein post-training can be beneficial. The majority of the research that's on Gen Pop clients looking for muscle gain, fat loss, overall protein intake for a 24-hour period seems to steer the ship more than anything else. So make sure you're getting enough protein, 0.7 to 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight over the course of a 24-hour window, and how much you allocate to the pre, post, peri workout window doesn't really matter as much. It's not something to spend a lot of mental energy on. Second question for the day, Jake, I'm just going down the list here. 4731, this individual, and I included the screenshot on my notes here because I thought it was funny and I wanted to read it. 4731 does not have the screenshot. The first one does, or the last one does, sorry. The second question here, 4731, is about nutrient-dense, low-calorie, high-volume foods. What's the benefit of those? Can you recommend some? So, just speaking on, and this kind of goes back to like the Mark Bell video as well, just speaking on nutrient-dense, low-calorie, high-volume foods, I think, and the coaches at Gifted HQ, when our athletes, when our clients undergo a fat loss diet, we highly encourage them to emphasize these types of foods. They're going to get you the micronutrients, the vitamins and minerals that you need. They're often very high in fiber, which is important for health and function of the body. And they're often high in water as well. So they high in fiber, high in water, high in micronutrients, take up a good amount of volume in your stomach. They make you feel full. Good. They should take up a large portion of the diet. Now, the most common prescription here for these types of foods that should make up the diet are going to be, you know, people always tell you, eat your protein, lots of fruits, lots of green leafy veggies. But that prescription doesn't always fit the bill when people want more details. And what I mean by that is there are certain situations within that scope there of proteins, fruits, veggies, where you may make the wrong choice while still following the prescription as it is. So in the scope of, or in the example of fruits, the example here would be like someone eating a lot of bananas. Bananas are a fruit. Bananas do have micronutrients. Bananas do have fiber. Bananas do contain a good amount of water. But bananas are relatively easy to overconsume. In terms of calorie density, they're quite dense in calories. Very easy to eat 300 to 400 calories worth of banana. If we look at a different fruit, like say an apple or a strawberry or a blackberry, these are going to be significantly higher in volume, higher in water, higher in fiber, and much less likely to overconsume. On the protein side of things, if you just tell someone to eat a lot of protein, they might go for a chicken breast. Cool. Low fat, lower calorie, higher in protein. But you said protein, and people have different definitions of what protein actually is. They might reach for the 70-30 ground beef. And in that example, lower in protein, much higher in fat, much higher in calories. They're still eating protein, but they're missing the mark. On the leafy green vegetables or vegetables as a whole side of things, people will often choose very starchy like celery, broccoli, cauliflower, vegetables that are high in fiber and specifically insoluble fiber. And when you really pound your body with a bunch of cruciferous vegetables that are full of insoluble fiber, you can really throw off your digestion, get a lot of bloating. I see this all the time. Bodybuilders start a prep diet and they're just consuming insane amounts of cruciferous vegetables. Like, my stomach hurts all the time because you're pounding your body with an obscene amount of fiber out of the gate that it wasn't ready for. And that it really should never be exposed to in those quantities. So yes, should you eat fruits, vegetables, and proteins? 100%. But take it a step further and say, what kind of fruits? What kind of vegetables? What mixture of fruits and vegetables should I utilize? And how do I get protein sources that come with a high protein value, but still keep fat and calories on the lower end? That's the nuance that we need when giving prescription like this. Last but not least is 4732. I love this question. Jake, thank you for pulling this question. It's a really, really good one. Guys, admire my mug. Peepo cozy. All right, the last question is all about imitation crab. Just put the question up and just let people read it. Just it's a really good question. Is it bad? I like imitation crab. Don't read the bottom part. Just read the question as a whole. Just like, is it morally and ethically bad that I like imitation crab? It's probably morally and ethically like good that you like imitation crab, right? It would be morally wrong if you're on the side of like protect the animals if you like regular crab. So ethically, this person is probably better than people who actually eat crab if you fall under that ideology. All right, number two reason why I like this question is this is a Publix goer. So this is someone in my neck of the woods who is a Publix enjoyer. We love those around here. I drive by to Publix quite often to grab some sushi. It's low in calories. Fucking how? Okay, if you say so. Compared to what? Compared to DiGiorno? Sure. Low in calories, at least seems pretty healthy. I would agree with that. The sushi I get is imitation crab meat, though, but I still really enjoy it. Is it bad for me? Isn't it just other meats blended together? I'm trying to get my health up. Good question. Good thinking. A lot of times people, you know, have this viewpoint. It's a food that is based on another food that is healthy, because it's hyper-processed, it must be bad for me because all hyper-processed foods are bad for you. Not necessarily true. Again, moderation is key. The comment here is what I really like. The top comment is why Reddit is amazing, and it says, I am a slut for imitation crab. No help, no answering to the question at all. It's just someone that's like, shit, man, I get it. I am also a slut for imitation crab. Me personally, I don't know. Temptation crab doesn't really do it for me. I don't dislike it. I'm not like repulsed by it, but I don't know. It just seems kind of flavorless. All right, let's actually talk about what imitation crab is. So imitation crab is essentially the turkey bacon. I love this analogy. Kudos to me. High five to me for coming up with this. Imitation crab is essentially the turkey bacon of the seafood world. Turkey bacon is, you know, they take pieces of turkey, they take it off, they pulverize it, they mash it into a shape that looks like bacon, and then you sizzle it up and you're like, yay, bacon of the turkey. What part of the turkey does the bacon come from? Answer that one. Where is the point to the bacon on this turkey right here? But imitation crab is essentially the same thing. It's just not even made out of crab. They take, you know, farm-raised white fish, they pulverize it, they mash it into a shape that looks like crab, and then they color it and they put it on sushi. It's done. So if you look at it as pulverized white fish, it's not bad because it's just made of white fish. If you subscribe to the ideology that, you know, our protein powder girl does, where preservatives and fillers and stabilizers and all of that are bad for your health, point blank period, no nuance or devil is in the dosage there, then imitation crab is not good for you. But I, a reasonable person, a person who actually understands how these things work in the human body, can tell you that imitation crab is not bad for you if you consume it in a reasonable amount. Even if you consume a good amount of it, I'm not 100% convinced that, you know, the stabilizers and colors that they do use to give it its shape and its texture and all of that are really something that you should worry about. So for this individual, consume your imitation crab in moderation if you're worried about those things. If this is a way for you to get your protein intake in, you know, this is you making a healthy choice over going to McDonald's and getting a double quarter pounder or something like that, then 100%, yes, this is a net positive to your health as a whole, and you should stick with it, especially because you enjoy it. And, you know, you and Mastermind Bomb should never, ever, ever, ever be shamed or feel guilty for being a slut for imitation crab. If you made it to this point of the podcast, comment below. Let me know what you are a slut for in the health food adjacent world. So take your favorite food that most people are like, isn't that bad for you? What are you a slut for? Me, your boy, and everyone already knows this, I am a slut for Crystal Light and low-calorie beverage powder mixes. I wouldn't even say I'm a slut. I'm whatever 10 steps up from a slut is. Like, I need to go to rehab for my Crystal Light and Diet Ocean Spray addiction. This flavor, cran grape, absolute heater. My favorite, and it's not even close. Actually, no. Commercially available, that one's my favorite. It's not even close. Rare to find is the Diet Grapefruit Juice. Love me some Diet Grapefruit Juice. I even found that Squirt, the soda Squirt, is grapefruit flavor. Didn't know that. Didn't know that until now, but now I know, and now you know. And if you're a grapefruit enjoyer, you know what to look for on the shelves. That's going to conclude us for the day. If you haven't done so already, make sure you do all the podcast stuff. Leave us a review. 5 stars, please. Send this to your friend. Send me a screenshot of you sending this in your group chat to a couple friends. And I don't know, I might send you like a $5 Amazon gift card. I might send you something silly from Amazon. I might even send you a t-shirt or a hat. Spread the word. This is the best new fitness podcast on the air today. Let the people know. We will see you on the next one. Peace out and stay gifted.